So in 2005, I had a job. And I had spent a year out of college at this point trying to figure out what in the world we were going to do with our lives. And I had it all figured out. I was going to go to dental school. So now what I had to do before I went to dental school is I had to have a job because I didn't get into dental school right away. So in this year, I had to make some money. And I got a job selling home electronics to specifically people who were building homes. And I started this job, and it seemed all great. And as things got going, what I found out my job really was to convince people to spend $15,000 on their internet, phone, speaker system through the house, TVs, and all of this, when they originally were going to spend five. So my job was to get them to spend $10,000 that I didn't really think they needed to spend on stuff I didn't really think they needed to have, so they could do things they probably didn't really need to do. So I told my boss, I said, I'm not really sure what to do here. And he said, you sell the stuff. So my boss told me I had to do it. So what is the only logical thing to do? Not work there anymore. Okay, that's not actually how it played out. It played out a little bit different because I stopped working there when I hated it. So all of that was true. But then at the same time, that was when God moved us to go to seminary and not dental school. So there was another shift going on there anyway. But I had a choice to make. See, my boss had told me to do something, and he wasn't telling me to do something bad. I signed up to work at this company that sold electronics. So I wasn't doing something immoral. He was a good, godly man. But what he was asking me to do, I didn't want to do. And so, like any self-respecting American, when your boss tells you to do something you don't want to do, you what? You don't do it. That's how we're wired. That's what we've been taught, and that's how we understand employers. Why? Because you can always get employed somewhere else. That's legitimate. But it causes a problem. See, it causes us to be unable to understand this passage. Unable to understand this passage. Because we don't understand authority. John chapter 9. We're going to begin in verse 35. But let's set the stage again and look at what's gone on to get us to this point. Jesus comes walking by the temple, or the synagogue, and he sees a man who's been blind since the day he was born, and he heals him. He makes him able to see, and this was on the Sabbath, so it made the Pharisees angry, and they called this man before him when they found out Jesus had made him able to see, and they demanded to understand more, so they question him, and he's sort of on trial for what went on. They question him about Jesus, and they tell him he can go. And they call his parents in, and they question his parents about the son, about Jesus. And the parents basically throw up their hands and say, please don't ask us. We're not going to say anything. Ask him. So they call this man back in, knowing that he was blind for X number of years. He's now an adult. And they ask him again, how did you be able to see? Because we know Jesus couldn't have done this because he's a sinner and a terrible man, and we don't know where he's from. We don't think he's from God. And this man credits Jesus with causing him to be able to see. And they kick him out of the synagogue. That's the story to this point. So now, here's blind man kicked out of the synagogue, effectively, as far as he understood salvation, told, you have now lost your ability to enter heaven, and you will enter hell for eternity. So he walks out. I don't know what he's thinking. The Bible doesn't tell us what he's thinking. If I were him, I'm pretty sure I would be just a little bit wondering, did I do the right thing? Did I make the right choice? So the story picks up in verse 35. Jesus heard that they had cast him out. And then having found him, he said, "Do you believe in the Son of Man?" He answered, "And who is he, sir, that I might believe in him?" Jesus said, "You have seen him, and it is he who is speaking to you." He said, "Lord, I believe." And he worshiped him. Jesus said, "For judgment I have come into this world, that those who do not see may see, and those who see may become blind." Some of the Pharisees near him heard these things, and they said, Are we also blind?" Jesus said to them, "If you were blind, you would have no guilt. But now that you see, now that you say we see, your guilt remains." Why does you having an employer cause you to be unable to understand this passage? Why does the American system cause us to be unable to understand this passage? Because we have this well-founded idea of civil disobedience. We don't have to do what our government tells us to do if we think that it's wrong. And don't read too much into that. I'm not going to do something that I think is wrong because the government tells me to. But we have this well-ingrained idea in us that that's our right. And so effectively then, nobody can tell us what to do. They can suggest that we do something or say they're going to punish us if we don't, but they can't make us do it. So the man is kicked out of the synagogue. And I love how it says, Jesus, having found him, Jesus went out looking for this man, knowing that he was the cause of this man's getting kicked out of his only understanding of God. So Jesus searches him out and finds him so that he can ask him the critical question of this entire story. All of chapter 9 builds to this one question: do you believe in the Son of Man? The Son of Man is a phrase or a title given to the coming Messiah. Everybody knew what Jesus meant when he said this. So he says basically, do you believe that the Messiah has come? Do you believe in the Messiah? Are you willing to cast your lot with him? Well, apparently he already is, because he already went so far as to allow himself to get kicked out of the synagogue for stating that he believed in this Messiah, this Jesus. But you know what? He has no idea who he's believing in. He's never seen him. He maybe has hardly heard his voice. He heard a short little interaction between Jesus and the disciples. He heard a short little phrase of Jesus telling him to go and wash his face off. That's it. So he rightly says, "And who is he that I might believe in him?" You're asking me if I believe in the Son of Man, but I don't even know who he is. Point him out, and then I'll make a decision. Point him out, and I'll believe. And Jesus said, "You're speaking to him. You're speaking to the one who caused you to be able to see. You're speaking to the one who has come to be the Redeemer, the Messiah. Do you believe?" That stays as the critical question through all of the New Testament. Do you believe? Here's who Jesus is. Do you believe it? Not do you like it. Not would you like to like it. Do you believe it? The only natural response for this man is, "Yes, I believe." But that's not what he says. And therein lies the problem of why we cannot understand this passage. What does he say? He does not say, "Yes, I believe." Or, "Jesus, I believe in you." What does he say? Look at it before we talk about it. What does he say? It's in verse, what number is it? It's in verse 38. What does the man say? "Lord, I believe." Not, "Jesus, yeah, I believe." Not, "Yes, I believe." "Lord, I believe." I have never referred to any employer I have had as Lord. Never even thought about referring to them as Lord. Not even sure I know what Lord means. And that's why we don't get it. That's why we don't get it. Because see, this man has now had Jesus reveal who he is to him. And his only natural response is to submit himself to Jesus as his Lord. We have employers, right? We have governing officials. And they tell us to do something, and we choose whether or not we want to. An employer has the possibility of firing you. The government of throwing you in jail. I mean, depending on what you do, they could possibly put you to death. A Lord is somebody who has the unilateral right as an individual to end your life if you disobey. Get that. He has the unilateral right to end your life if you disobey. This is not somebody you say, I'd really rather not do what you've asked me to do. Is that okay? He says, no, it's not okay. And what does this guy do? He immediately takes himself and places himself under Jesus as his Lord, his master, his only authority, his ultimate authority. We don't have that experience in life. So it becomes very difficult for us to actually rightly understand what it then means to have Jesus as our Lord. Because we want to see Jesus as our boss or our teacher. We don't really want to see him as somebody who says, do this. And we say, yes, sir, I will do that. Without thought, without objection, without consideration of something else. Why? We do it because he asked us to. We do it because he told us to. We do it because we want nothing other than doing exactly what he told us to do. But just take a moment, honestly, and think about your life and ask yourself if that's actually true in your life. And we'll make it easier. Just think about yesterday. Just think about yesterday and ask yourself the question, did I go through my life saying, I am going to do exactly what Jesus says and nothing else? I know you didn't. No, I know you won't today, nor will you tomorrow, and it's impossible for us to do this. I understand. So then let's back off from that, because every time we sin, we're ultimately saying to Jesus, I don't care. I don't care about you. I don't care what you have to say. I don't care what you've done for me. I want what I want for me. So let's set that aside. And now think about your life yesterday and ask yourself the question, did you wake up with the intent of saying, I want to do exactly what Jesus calls me to do? I want to live my life exactly how he calls me to live it. I want to submit myself to the people around me because he calls me to do it. I want to be like him regardless of anything else, and I want him to be the only authority that I ultimately listen to, and I want to ultimately listen to everything he says. That's not natural to us. See, we're oriented as people, having sinned and being sinful, we're oriented as people away from God. And so unless you intentionally and specifically and on purpose make that choice, it's not going to happen. But here's this man. His only response to Jesus is to voluntarily put himself in a place that he says, you're my Lord. The flip side of this, a different way to look at it, is the word doulos. And we'll come to this, and we'll talk about it more. Doulos means slave. But it actually means bigger than just that, because it means slave who chose to be a slave. So if you were to go through the epistles, and do this at some point, go through the epistles and just look at the first few verses of every book. James says, James, a bondservant of Jesus Christ. The word, doulos, a voluntary slave of Jesus Christ. Paul says, Paul, a doulos of Jesus Christ, a voluntary slave of Jesus Christ. He then is my Lord and my master, and I've said I will do everything you ask because I want to. They both failed. Don't put them on some pedestal they're not on. They both failed, and God continued to give them grace so they could continue to grow, but they intentionally made the choice to make themselves the slave of Jesus. Not the employee, the slave. They didn't ask for Jesus to be their employer. They asked for him to be their Lord, their master. That's what we're called to. That level of giving ourselves over to who he is. It's not a half-in sort of works system. You either jump all the way in, or you're not jumping in at all. That's what he calls from us. That's the response that we see here. But his response goes beyond that. Last night I was at the play, the little kids play, the community play, and it's Peter Pan, right? And not getting into the story at all, I don't want to ruin it for you. Not getting into the story at all. You ever watched people do a play? Particularly, you ever watched kids do a play? They get into this, and it's like the world evaporates. And the only thing that matters is what the director told them to do. And they do what the director told them to do. Yeah, there's people out there, and they see them doing stuff, and then they're doing what the director said, and that's all great, but it even goes beyond that. They don't care what you think of them in that moment. In that moment, they're wrapped up in what they're doing, and they just explode with energy. They explode. They're loving what they do, right? This man not only called Jesus his Lord, he then immediately worshiped him. He immediately took all that was inside of him and said, I don't care what all of those people around there are doing. There's Pharisees watching me here, and I don't care. I am going to worship you and you alone in this moment because there's no other response that I could have. And then we, as good 21st century American Christians, want to be very stoic and not get excited. We want to allow ourselves to be very aware of what other people would think of us. I have this incredible gift in music. And that gift is that I have no gift in music. I just don't. And you know why that's a gift? Because sometime in late high school, I had to make a decision. I was either singing these songs because I wanted to worship God, or I was not singing them because I didn't want people to hear me. Those are the only two choices I had. I didn't have the choice of I'm going to sing so other people could say, well, you're not too bad. No, I don't have that choice. So I either choose to set myself aside and not care what people around me are thinking and sing songs to my God, or I choose to keep my trap shut so that nobody knows how I sing. If there's any one thing in this world that embarrasses me, it's music and singing when other people could hear me. I mean, it just doesn't make sense. I know I shouldn't be so worried about it, and I know that it really wouldn't be that big of a deal if people heard me sing, but it is, and I can't get myself to get beyond it. Unless I have the opportunity to be singing honestly songs to Jesus. See, that's then a great gift, because I had to learn young in life that you don't matter. It's not about you. Not about what you think of me in this moment. In this moment, it's about God and how he sees my heart wanting to worship him. So then it becomes easier for me to feel more expressive even in my worshiping of him within a group of people. I don't mind standing when other people are sitting if I want to. I don't mind raising my hand sometimes. Why? Because I've already taken the step to embarrass myself by singing to begin with. This man put himself in a position where the people around him watching him were going to ridicule him. They were going to see him worshiping Jesus, and he was going to not care what they saw. He was going to not care what they heard. He was going to not care what they thought about him when they saw and heard what they were going to see and hear. How often is that true for us? How often is it so true for us that we only care about Jesus, that we don't care about what the people around us think? And I'm going to tell you, just by watching most Christians, most of the time it's about this much that they don't care. And when they start to feel excited and they start to feel like they want to do something, they think, nope, hold it in check. You don't want to look a spectacle. Yet, you go to a football game or a basketball game or some other sporting game, and all of a sudden you realize, I don't mind looking a fool. Just ask yourself a question. If you find that being you, just ask yourself an honest question. Which is more important? The answer has to be Jesus. It really does. If you come to a different conclusion, let's sit and talk. Now ask yourself the question, why do I care less what this group of people at the football game or basketball game is thinking about me than I do about this group of people when I'm worshiping God, when this is the more important? The man's response is to call Jesus his Lord and worship him. That's the response that we are to have as well. But then I want you to see what Jesus does in the next moment. As if you're going to worship him, and if you're going to let him be your Lord, you've got to know what he's about to do. Because what he's going to do will make you want to rip your hair out. And here's what he says. Jesus replied to the man after he says, Lord, I believe, and worshiped him. Jesus said, for judgment I came into this world. We've already talked about the judging bit. We'll talk about it again, but at this moment, let's just state quickly that this judging is not a wrong thing. It's a right judging. For judgment I came into the world, that those who do not see may see, and those who see may become blind. Okay, let's put it in different words. I came into this world so that those who are failures might succeed, and those who are successful might fail. That's what he's saying. I came into this world to take everything like this and make it like this. I came to make everything you know and you see and you understand, and I flip it on its head. So it's the exact opposite of what you think. Why? Why? Because we're oriented away from God as people. So if he's going to come into here with a system that's oriented toward him, it's going to be the opposite of what we're used to. You want an example of that? Matthew chapter 5, verses 2 through 12. It's the Beatitudes. It's Jesus listing out 10 ways that he is going to take everything you understand about this world and make it opposite. The meek will inherit the earth. The meek don't get anything. They don't. We know this, which is why people tell you from when you're little, stand up for yourself. Well, that's not meek. You will not find in the scriptures, especially in the gospels of watching Jesus' life, him standing up for himself. It doesn't happen because he was meek and he didn't care about himself. He cared about other people. Blessed are the peacemakers. Blessed are those who are persecuted. Read the Beatitudes and look at the fact that in that system, nothing works the way we're told it's going to work, because Jesus came in with a system that is going to flip everything on its head and make it opposite of what we expect. And if you're going to call him Lord, you have to understand that that's what he's doing now. He's taking everything you know and everything you think and everything the world tells us, and he's going to flip it upside down. And he's going to make it be opposite. And he's going to call from me, and he's going to call from you the opposite of what is intuitively natural to us. And we are going to defy what the world expects. You know what happens when you defy what the world expects? They call you a fool. They tell you you don't see reality. They tell you you're ruining something. You're ruining your business because you're not trying to cutthroat make as much money as you can. You're ruining your kids because maybe you decide, I'm not going to let them be in 7 sports this year. I'm going to show them the prioritization of family over sports. They're going to think you're a fool. Other believers are going to think you're a fool. If you start living life intentionally the way Jesus would have us, upside down of what everyone else expects, they are going to think you're off your rocker. This man did not care. What do you think Jesus expects of us? He expects of us to not care. Because the worst thing that can happen to us as believers, the worst thing that can happen to us as believers, is we become incredibly successful. And in our incredible amount of success, we lose sight of being like Christ and building his kingdom. Because in your success, whether that's in business or in life, your success is intended to be used to build his kingdom, not to acquire for yourself. We've talked about that before. It's not going away. That's what we're called to do. That's who we're called to be. And the world will think we're nuts. We need to be using the materials and the resources that we have here at church in the same way. It might not look like the way the rest of the world would make building use or money or personnel or time or whatever else. It might not look the way that they would use it. But it might look the way that Jesus has called us to use it. See, if you're going to believe, you got to make him your Lord. And when you make him your Lord, you're going to worship him. And as your Lord, whom you worship, understand that he's in the business of flipping the world on its head. That's the expectation. It's not the exception. It's the expectation. Let's pray. God, we come to you in this moment again, and we thank you for loving us. We thank you for giving us the opportunity to know your Son and to be changed by him. I pray that our time this morning was honoring to you, Father. And I pray that you take the rest of our time here now to open relationships to each other so that we can help continue to build Christ's likeness into each other. Show us how to be like your Son and give us the strength to do it. We love you, Father. Amen.